Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I'm Andrew.
Well, happy 15 years of podcast gold, guys. Woo!
Very exciting.
I got my glass of champagne right here.
I tell you what, my relationship with Paul, you guys, this podcast has lasted twice as long as my first marriage. I'm just saying.
That's phenomenal. I honestly, this is one of the longest relationships in my life outside of my wife. Well, outside of my wife and immediate family, this is probably some of my longest running relationships.
That's a fair point. You know why? Because we don't see each other and we only talk to each other once a week.
And I mean, live in different states.
Distance provides a little buffer, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I noticed we haven't got together in person in years.
Yeah.
But we're here. I'm assuming for podcast gold, you're referring to a different podcast.
No, it's this one. It's this one. This is, this is the gold standard, right?
We're not platinum, but we're gold.
Award-winning podcast.
That is true. We are an award-winning podcast.
Mm-hmm. We are.
Yeah, yeah. We won
a funny book award.
We won a spooky outhouse award after our first year. So
that's right.
How could you forget that, Paul?
That's right. The prestigious.
Well, because they kicked us out because they said you're crashing our server with your podcast.
Oh, I thought it was because of the cease and desist from the movie studio.
From Paramount Pictures for that G.I. Joe movie review.
I thought that's what killed us.
All of the above.
All of the above.
But, I woke up in a panic this morning.
Ooh.
I woke up realizing that I had left my work computer, my badge, a bunch of information about various bank accounts. And I'm like, oh God, where did that? I didn't bring it home. Where did I leave it? And I am in a panic, and I realize I left it in my locker at the gym at my old college that I haven't been to in 20 plus years. And I was like, I'm freaking out. I am like, I turn and look at the clock and I'm like, well, it's 4 a.m. I'm awake. That was a dream I had, and I woke up just panicked, just freak completely flipped. So that was how my morning started today.
But then as soon as you went to gym, you're like, oh, wait, hold on.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I know I haven't been to the gym. It's like that Steve the Otter cartoon or comic where it says, Steve joined the gym back in January and has had poor results. He's on his way there now to find out what's going on.
Well, I kind of feel like it's the 80s as well. I'm looking at my Swatch watch, checking the time. Beverly Hills Cop is there's a new Beverly Hills Cop film out.
Right.
And
right.
I have a pull box again.
Look at you.
I know. This pull past box. Week. I do.
The tyranny of the pull box.
Well, really, the tyranny of having to be there on Wednesday to get stuff before it sells out.
Because if it's in your box, they don't hold it for you?
I don't have one yet.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. The pull box is saving me from the tyranny of having to be there early on Wednesdays to get stuff before it sells out. That way I can come in on a Thursday, Friday, and be confident that my books will be. And I only put three books on there to start with. So, I put the Blood Hunt main series. I threw Rook, Exodus, and I put Redcoat. I forgot to put Destro and Scarlet on there. I need to fix that. But
my old comic guy, when I would put something, on my pull list, he would then populate it with any tie-in that title was involved in.
Yeah, I don't think that's how this store runs. We'll see. We were talking about it for a while before I signed up. I don't think there's a box on the application where you check if you want tie-ins and variant covers and stuff, and I did not check that box.
It was always that awkward conversation. I
don't want this.
I did not ask for this. Right.
Yeah.
But I think that's important.
That was always awkward, right? Like I'd put it back on the shelf and they'd be like, hey, man. Because sometimes I wouldn't pick up my comics every week. And he'd be like, hey, man, if you put those comics back on the shelf, they're not going to sell. And if you would just let me know, I wouldn't have ordered it. I'm like, I didn't ask for that comic book to begin with.
Yeah.
I am hopeful. I like the two owners of this store. I'm hopeful that will not be an issue here. But,
I think it's great that you're courting right? That you know, before you jumped into anything, before you moved into a pull box relationship, you had the talk.
I think that's great.
Yeah,
there's a little contract that you sign too.
That
has a little check boxes like you know what you want, what you don't want. Like do you want bags and boards?
What are your safe words?
Foxhole.
Mine is meatloaf because I would do anything for love, but not that.
So it's kind of like any new relationship. It's a little exciting. It's a little scary. So. We'll see how it works out in the weeks to come.
Well, if it's anything like last time or anything like the other three people in this podcast, it's going to end up in a non-committal digital relationship.
We're not looking for anything serious. We just want to have a good time.
I just want what I want.
I had a long-term monogamous relationship with my digital provider until they let themselves go to hell and took up with a rich billionaire and destroyed everything I loved about them.
Fair.
Fair, yeah. Fair. Yeah, absolutely.
But the rest of us don't have your moral sensibility, so it's still more convenient than going to the
counter shop. We don't value ourselves nearly as much as Andrew does.
No. Have you guys seen Have you guys seen an Indecent Proposal?
Yes.
I feel like Comixology was the hot woman. You know, Bezos was the rich billionaire, and then the president of Comixology was the husband who was willing to let his wife sleep with another man for money.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it still upsets me. Go on.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a few weeks since we've spoken, so we have to get caught up on Star Wars, The Acolyte.
Yes.
A lot has happened in these last three episodes. I think it's been three, right? Two?
It's definitely been two. I'm trying to think if it's been three or not.
It's been two. Okay, in the last two episodes, a lot has happened, including, like, literally half the cast dying. Maybe more than
that. Yeah, that was kind of a... That was sort of a bloodbath, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, most of them I didn't really mind because, like, a lot of them were characters we knew nothing about. But the female Padawan, really started to like her character. Yeah.
Jackie.
Well, and I kept expecting big painful. Things. I kept expecting big things from Jord, and not anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll just go ahead and throw it out there right now. The thing that I find annoying about The Acolyte is that it like cues up like, oh, this is going to be really cool. And then not, you know, like killing off Carrie Ann Moss in the first episode.
Right.
I was like the minute I did not realize Carrie Ann Moss was in this show until I saw her on screen. I'm like, oh, God, I am here for Carrie Ann Moss, the Jedi, and, dead. And we get queued up with, hey, Wookiee Jedi, and I'm like, God, I can't wait. Dead,
it's off kind of like
screen. Dead off screen.
Yeah. The Acolyte's kind of like the George R. R. Martin of Star Wars series.
Yeah, it's gonna happen off screen. You know, it's
all your favorite characters are gonna die.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and at least in a George R. R. Martin story, you get a chance to fall in love with the character. All you're really getting here is like, okay, I'm here for that. You know. Dead.
I mean, that's all it took for me to fall in love with Carrie Ann Moss's character was like 15 seconds.
It only took Carrie Ann Moss popping up on screen for me to go, okay, let me clear my calendar. I know where I am going to be every week now. And then, oh, I guess I can free up my calendar.
I have no idea who she is other than the character she played in this.
She was in
Matrix. Never saw The Matrix?
Who was she in The Matrix?
Trinity.
Oh, I did not recognize her.
Yeah.
Well, that's She's been like great. 20 years, but yeah.
But can I say that I don't care for I think the character's name is Bez, the little sniffy guy.
Oh, the bloodhound.
The creature effects on him are terrible.
I didn't think that bad.
That's so funny because I liked him and I thought his effects were good. I'm like, I really like that they're doing so much practical with that character. And
I like that they're doing practical. I just don't think that the suit and particularly the headpiece is, very convincing.
Yeah. For me, that felt very Star Wars. Felt very like, especially watching this week's episode. I was like, this feels kind of old school Star Wars following this little practical creature around the ship.
Yeah,
I don't care. This little sniffing thing. I liked it.
Yeah, I had no strong feelings either way.
Same. I'm with Wayne. I thought it was fine.
I would say I don't know. Maybe it sounds like I'm going to be the sole dissenting opinion, but I'm really enjoying the show.
Oh, well, I'm enjoying the show.
Oh, yeah. I find it a bit predictable, but I'm loving the show.
I won't say that I'm loving the show. I would say that I'm entertained. But yeah, I wouldn't, you know, it's not like watching Andor or Ahsoka for me, which, you know, both extremely enjoyable. But, you know, it's better than not having Star Wars. How about that?
I think I like it better than Obi-Wan so far.
It's certainly better than Boba Fett.
Well, definitely better than Boba Fett.
Yeah. And I agree on Obi-Wan, but
I would say the same, Paul. I particularly enjoyed Obi-Wan on the rewatch.
Yeah, I think Obi-Wan starts weak but gets strong, and this one, I don't know, they all kind of do, because this one
started a little slow.
Yeah, and this one really picked up in episode 4, I'd say. And these last 3 episodes I thought have been really good. I like what they're setting up in this new episode with the stranger, and you know, maybe he's a Sith, maybe not, but kind of the hint is that he may be actually a Knight of Ren, or setting up the Knights of Ren.
What I thought was really interesting about him is I didn't think much of him physically when he was in his alter ego mode as the apothecary, right?
Yeah, but then he got naked, and you're like, hold on.
Then he took his shirt off, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, look at the guns on that guy.
I mean, he pulled a really good Clark Kent.
He really did. I mean, that was like, holy cow. He lift me over his head. Just like,
without using the force.
That's right.
You know, the one thing that I noticed, and I'm sure a lot of you did as well, but like, you know, he's got that big scar that they kept showing on the back of his, and then they showed that one Jedi master has a whip, a lightsaber whip, and I'm like, I see where we're going here.
I did not like the lightsaber whip.
No, I think it's a dumb, I didn't care for it either, but I at least appreciated it in the context of the show, like what it hints at. My theory is that obviously Saul was, you know, Saul obviously did horrible things, right? Killed the knights, killed the witches, whatever. I don't know
that he did it. I feel like he's aware of it.
Yeah, I think he's aware of it.
Yeah, he's at least a party. He at least allowed it to happen.
This episode, I thought that something had happened that he wasn't, like, he didn't know. This episode, it became obvious he knows what happened.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. It's very clear that he is read in and was aware of what happened. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And his guilt, the stranger. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, his guilt obviously isn't as great as some of the other people who are in that party, especially like Tobin, you know, who decided to, you know,
just kill
himself. Go into a monastery for, you know, 15, 16 years, and then, you know, commit suicide for forgiveness. Yeah. But go on, Paul.
Well, and I think the stranger, I think he might actually have been a Padawan, right? Because there's like a scene, it's a flashback, I think, in the first episode or second episode where they show Osha in the, you know, the Jedi Academy with the kids and stuff like that. And they show, you know, a couple of other characters in there. And there's a young, you know, Asian boy. And I'm wondering if that is actually the stranger. Like, I wonder if, you know, maybe we're going to see some reveal that he was actually a Padawan with Osha, you know, and left the order because of some horrible things. Yeah.
See, they seem to me to set up that he made a comment about him being a lot older than he looks. So I kind of got the impression he's actually a long lived because of the force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. So I don't know. I think there's two more episodes.
I'm not keeping count. I couldn't tell you.
It's 8 total, wasn't it? So
okay, then yeah. So there's 2 more episodes to go. So there's I think we're gonna get our flashback episode in episode 7, and then the resolution in episode 8. I kind of feel like that's what.
And then Anakin shows up.
And then Darth Vader shows up.
Well, you know, like I said, it's fine. I'm entertained. You know, it's not going to break my heart when it's over.
But won't it?
When Anakin shows up, yeah.
I still kind of think the whole, every time I see her with her pip droid, I'm like, man, that's real close to a pip boy. I feel like Disney's just getting a little cocky there.
I just love that little PDA thing she's got. The pip droid. Yeah,
it's cool. And we haven't mentioned that Her sister killed it. Wiped it out. Reset it to factory default.
Yeah. I'd rather not think about that, honestly, Wayne. I was trying not to think about
that. That was kind of cruel. I was just like, man, that's awful.
It's kind of like killing the dog. You know what?
They did that to C-3PO in Rise of Skywalker, and then they were able to undo it. So I'm pretty sure they can undo that factory reboot.
No.
The data's stored there somewhere.
Once you do a hard reset, it's over. There's nothing in the cloud for that pip.
I am pretty sure Apple would tell you.
Once you go format C colon, you're done.
You're done. That's the way to age ourselves, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, because this show is not as poorly written as Rise of Skywalker, so.
Fair. Well, maybe if the Acolyte isn't heartbreaking and heart-wrenching for you, Aaron, maybe the finale of House of Brainiac was.
You know, I got to tell you, it has been a while, I feel like, since Superman's had a really good, crossover event, something big that they're going to collect in a trade, something big that I've enjoyed. And I really dug House of Brainiac. I thought that it, for the most part, was really well executed.
I did, too. I thought there were some pacing issues.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think some parts took too long, and then some parts felt rushed, and the ending felt rushed by comparison.
Yeah.
But I actually really enjoyed it. Honestly, my main disappointment with House of Brainiac is that and I'm not referring to the epilogue. I'm referring to the cliffhanger ending of where did the Brainiac Queen go?
Right.
Is literally already resolved within the next week.
Oh, that's my big complaint. And we'll get to that when we talk about Absolute Zero and Absolute Power. But when Brainiac's plan is revealed that he's creating a Brainiac Queen, right? You know, that's the whole House of Brainiac, and he's collected all of the other Brainiacs, Vril Dox and others. The creation of what feels like the Borg Queen, right, from Star Trek, really seemed kind of cool, and I thought, well, this is interesting. It'll be, it'll be cool to see how this, impacts, Brainiac, and, will Brainiac take on a secondary role to this character, yada, yada. And then, of course, the character is immediately taken off the board. I mean, it could not have happened faster, Paul.
Yeah.
And so we don't get to enjoy anything about, the Queen, and, before Brainiac is ejecting her out into space because, everything's about to blow up on the Brainiac ship. And so Brainiac is gone. The ship is gone. And, the Queen is jettisoned off into space, never to be seen or heard of again until, Absolute Zero, which came out the same week.
Yeah.
Don't you know, no matter where you are, if you're jettisoned into space, you go to Earth.
You land on Earth. Yeah. Yeah. So I was disappointed in that. But I will say one of the things I was really surprised about, and spoilers, by the way, one of the things I was really surprised about in House of Brainiac is that no one died other than perhaps Brainiac. Yeah. I really thought this was where they were going to kill off some of the Superman family. For instance, I thought at a minimum, Lana would lose her, super lady powers. She did not. I thought there was a strong possibility that Lana would die because they're not really doing anything with Lana these days. I was surprised by that. I mean, I felt like it was an opportunity for them to, clean up the House of L. Yeah. And they didn't do that. So that was a big surprise for me that everybody, escaped, unscathed from, the House of Brainiac storyline. And that all of the captured Brainiac cities are liberated and immediately, churned into a great big world ship of their own, which I don't think I care for that. So, I've talked a lot. You guys.
Yeah, my bigger surprise was that Lana still had powers and they didn't undo everything New 52 because we haven't seen her in so long.
Yeah. Well, and that's my point. Why not either depower her or kill off the character, sacrifice the character and, make that a dramatic point. But they did not do that. They did not choose to do this, which makes me wonder if they've got plans for Lana.
Probably not. I mean, they did kill off all those Zarnians.
Well,
that they introduced in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a thousand Zarnians and they're dead.
that was a disappointment for me, is because I liked Same. The Zarnian story, and I didn't, I'm not surprised that they killed them off in the story, mm-hmm. but that it was done so easily.
Well, so easily that you didn't save a couple, you know, that you didn't have a few get away, you know, that, I mean, yeah. it just would have made for some interesting storytelling for Lobo.
Yeah.
Versus, hey, I've got a family, now I don't. Same book. You know?
Yeah. I'd say my only disappointment with the finale of House of Brainiac, other than what I already mentioned, is all the super characters were on board, like we mentioned, but they really don't do anything, right? I mean, really, the only super... I mean, yes, they help in the grand battle. There's a big two-page spread where they're part of the battle, but the focus is still Superman, Lex Luthor, Supergirl. Those are really the only three core characters who made a difference. Story-wise.
Connor was in there a bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Connor definitely had a big part to it.
Yeah.
I was left wondering, I thought John Kent was there too, but he didn't seem to be.
Yeah, he was very minor, just as Chinese Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, just hardly in it at all.
Well, and I kind of hate how it wrapped up with Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Forgetting who he is. And I'm like, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, don't undo literally all the story progression we've had on Lex Luthor that we've enjoyed.
Right.
Over the last 12 issues or 14 issues. But yeah, looks like Lex Luthor is, at least for now, Lex Luthor got rebooted. He got a format C:.
That's right. Well, you know, because he tried to download the Brainiac intelligence. And of course, you know, he doesn't have a level 9, 12, 13, whatever. He doesn't have a supercomputer in his head. And so, you know, it rewrote all of Lex. And so he's got all this, you know, he's got gigabytes of space now.
Yeah.
It's an excuse to turn him evil again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I to reset him back to, you know, original Lex. So
which,
that's the way you wipe out on it.
I hate when there's good story progression on a character that's just undone. You know,
completely agree. And you know, I'm critical of all these things, but I still rather enjoyed this series.
I did too. And you know, so let's talk about the epilogue, which is that Doomsday is returning. Which I feel like Doomsday was just here.
He in the Rebirth books, right? Was it Rebirth or was it New 52? And you had because Doomsday is not bad enough. You had a different version of Doomsday, and I forget what that one was called.
Yeah, well, and then we had the 75th or whatever, the 25th anniversary of the death and return of Superman that had the Doomsday. So like them hinting that Doomsday is coming back really doesn't it whelms me.
I tell you what, while I'm not eagerly anticipating the return of Doomsday, what I will say is that for a brief moment when I looked at the page, I thought it was really well done. It was very evocative of the first appearance, right? You know, back when, prior to Superman 75 back in the day, where you just had these, you know, random panels that would show up at the back of your Superman story and something's hitting a wall, you know, and it, you know, it took forever before it was revealed that, hey, here's the big bad and he's breaking out and gonna kick Superman's ass. I thought that was really nice how it captured that tone. So I'll say that it was well done. I just don't know how excited I am about another Doomsday story.
If they do this build up to it like they did the original, and they don't kill one of the super characters, I'm going to be pissed. Because that's the only reason to do a build up like this is if at least one of the super characters is going to die, because you have some spares.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm not a big fan of, hey, let's kill our characters, but I will say, you know, you could eliminate a few characters to bloody Superman's nose. I don't want to see Superman die again. I don't want to lose Kara. I certainly don't want to lose Connor, but I think everybody else lifts right out. You know,
I don't want to lose John either, but everyone else, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about John because, how Absolute Power number one wrapped up. Wayne, did you end up picking it up or no?
No, I am just so sick of Amanda Waller stories that it's not holding any appeal for me.
So Absolute Zero and Absolute Power came out within a week of each other. This is one of those rare circumstances that I thought the Zero issue book aligned well with the first issue.
It was a good way to transition from the end of the Batman failsafe arc and the House of Brainiac into Absolute Power.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good setup book. I don't know why you couldn't have called it issue one, except, you know, marketing. but I enjoyed it. I thought they dovetailed nicely into each other. And I don't disagree with Wayne one little bit about Amanda Waller. She is not a character I appreciate very much, and I think she's wildly overused. She's like the DC Universe version of Wolverine. I have to say I enjoyed both stories. I thought her plan, though very Lex Luthor-like in its origins, is consistent with her character. All of this stuff, Amanda Waller's secret powers, her ability to plan and manipulate people. And she's, very talented at that in this book. And you can see where Batman understands what the hell she's done. And he realized that he has completely misread the situation. And that moment, I thought, was chilling.
Yeah.
When Batman realizes that, oh, crap, I've misread all of these clues.
She's already won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, dear. because usually Batman takes his beating and then you realize that, he's had this figured out all along and the beating was part of the plan. And he's got nothing. And, they've already taken Superman off the board. And so, who's going to fix stuff, Paul? Is it going to be Booster Gold? I mean, he's our savior. If this was a Tom King book, it would totally be Booster Gold.
Yeah. So, it's basically Amanda Waller has depowered all heroes, all superheroes. Well, almost all superheroes. She's depowered most of the superheroes and replaced them with her own Justice League made up of Amazo robots that's being controlled by Failsafe and the Brainiac Queen, which, kind of going back to my point about the Brainiac Queen, Failsafe was just defeated last month in Batman also. So like the fact that they basically both of those stories, the Batman story and the Superman story, literally led up to this, which would be fine, except I feel like there needed to be like 6 months or a year break to take the villains off.
Completely agree. You should be wondering where those characters are versus, they're right here.
It's literally already answered next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be my main gripe about it, which is probably just a matter of planning. But
here's my main gripe, because even though that is a significant gripe for me, in the book, in issue one, Green Arrow betrays all the superheroes. He helps Amanda Waller, backdoor into the secret Justice League channels and, compromises all the Justice Leaguers, all the superheroes. I don't know how Green Arrow comes back from that.
I think he's undercover.
I don't know. If Batman didn't know about it, how could he be undercover?
I don't know. I don't feel like Green Arrow. I mean, because Green Arrow is written like so unapologetically bad. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like he's hamming it up.
I don't know. Because the tone is, I've been telling you guys for a long time. And it seems to be leaning into his very anti-authoritarian, views. I mean, I buy the argument that Green Arrow's making. But man, if Green Arrow was truly undercover, I don't think that he could have that. I think that he would have warned Superman, for instance, because, Superman and the super family are in big bad shape. So I don't know, Paul. It just feels like the turn that Mark Waid has written into the character. I don't know how he comes back from that.
I don't know. We'll see. I kind of feel like we're gonna see him go good.
I don't know, Paul.
I feel like it. But I will say the one thing that I knew I was gonna look forward to, or the one thing I was looking most forward to in this book that met my expectations is the Dan Moore's artwork. Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Moore's artwork is amazing in this book. He is so good. He and Mark Waid have really become a fantastic creative team. I mean, their run on World's Finest is, borderline epic. And
Shazam. They did the Shazam book for a little while.
Yeah. No, the artwork is gorgeous. The storytelling is fantastic. Even though Amanda Waller's in it, I'm excited about this crossover.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm most excited about is that it's also only 4 issues long.
Yeah.
It's maybe it's a monthly book, I don't know, but the fact that it's 4 issues means we're not going to overstay its welcome. Of course, it's going to have a lot of tie-ins, and I will say, unlike Blood Hunt, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, I don't feel like I need to pick up the tie-ins on this one as much.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm good just sticking with the main title, and if it ties into any of the books I'm already reading from
DC, then that's kind of my thought. Yeah.
Yeah. But Jonathan Kent, we'll see what, you know, big surprise at the end with Jonathan Kent. Yeah. Not sure where we're going with that.
Doesn't look good. Doesn't look good, Paul. But, you know, something that I was completely surprised by this week that I hadn't really tuned in that it was coming out was Marvel's Annihilation 2099, number one. I'm a huge fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy Annihilation books. There were 2 a series of Annihilation books, that were just fantastic and really relaunched the Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, this is set in the 2099 space and starts off with Nova 2099.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for anything they put 2099 on a cover. I'll at least look to see what it is.
Well, and, you know, some of my favorite 2099 books were like the X-Men 2099 and certainly Spider-Man 2099. But, you know, I really liked the cosmic stuff they did. And this really, you know, is a slice of that. Wayne, tell me what you thought about Nova 2099.
I absolutely loved it. I did figure out early in the book who Nova was.
Yeah.
They made 1 or 2 comments early on that kind of hint at it, so it's not a big surprise. But yeah, I love how they're tying things in with, you know, there's a null group out there, there is the Annihilation wave itself out there, all of that there, but this is one character being followed, the last Nova.
And, you know, I'm a sucker for the Nova Corps. You know, the original Nova, Richard Rider. I'm a sucker for the Nova that appeared in the Guardians of the Galaxy books by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. I love those characters. I love the Nova Corps concept, you know, because it's really it's Marvel's version of the Green Lantern Corps. And it's just a lot of fun. I always have gotten a kick out of them. And what the last Nova in the Annihilation 2099 book by Steve Orlando and Ibrahim Roberson illustrates the last Nova story. What it supposes is Wolverine lives long enough into the 2099s and becomes the last Nova. And it's a pretty kick-ass story. I just really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was spectacular. And I was surprised by the second story in the book, Dracula Risen, also by Steve Orlando and illustrated by Dale Eaglesham.
I did not see that one coming at all, that they were going to do a Dracula in space story.
And it also was a lot of fun. And this book continues. I thought this was going to be a one shot, but no, it's a, I don't know if it's a limited series or if it's an ongoing, but the adventures of Dracula continue on into the next book. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. I was curious what you would think of the twist of it being Wolverine and him having to have basically killed every being on the Nova planet.
You know, I like yourself, I figured out that it was Wolverine earlier on because, you know, they just made, I think it was 1 or 2 references to how fast he heals. Right. And I'm like, oh, OK, I know who this is. And, but I thought there might be a twist later on because, you know, for a while he's just in his helmet. Right. Or he's so badly burned, you can't tell, you know, who he is. But I was like, well, maybe it's Sabretooth, you know. But I very much enjoyed the Wolverine reveal, and I enjoyed the backstory. Though I'm sad to see that that the Nova Corps is gone. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that the Nova Corps has been annihilated. But I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought both of those stories were right on. I liked how, you know, Dracula just, you know, made all the crew vampires, and we're going to go off and, you know, make more vampires. And it's good stuff.
One thing I appreciated in the art is when Wolverine finally pops his claws, you can tell on the art that one set of them is bone and the other is adamantium.
Yeah. Yeah, because the one arm had grown back, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he somehow had lost an arm, and he's like, they talk about it, you know, was it the Hulks? Was it? But yeah, the fact that one arm had grown back, they didn't miss the detail that adamantium doesn't grow back.
Yep. Yep.
Now, nice touch into detail.
Yeah. Well, it was just such a cool story. I thought it was a lot of fun. This is the kind of book that, you know, as a teenager reading comic books back in the day, would have had me reading it and rereading it and rereading it, because it was just cool.
So is this going to be a single $29.99 title that moves forward, or are there going to be other $29.99 titles? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, this book kind of snuck up on me. I was not aware of it until I picked it up.
I missed it.
Looking at Comixology, it does look like it's a miniseries.
Okay.
So this is the first issue. Five-issue miniseries. Let's see. Issue 2, July 10th. So maybe biweekly.
Yeah. And
weekly. It's actually a weekly series.
And the next issue features Star-Lord 2099 versus Quasar 2099.
I might have to see if I can pick that up.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. Issue 3 has Terex the Tamer on the cover. Hmm. Issue 4 has Silver Surfer on the cover. And issue 5 has Dracula on the cover.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And there aren't nearly enough fun comics these days.
Well,
yeah,
you know, go ahead.
I picked up a couple of Wolverine books that I haven't read yet that I'm hoping fall into that, you know, because they seem to be really drawing on nostalgia right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what a really fun event has been in Marvel has been Blood Hunt. I've really enjoyed it. It's like I'm back in high school reading Galactic Storm. You know, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, I need to personally thank Paul, because I'm not reading Doctor Strange right now. As much as I was enjoying the book, I got behind on it and I just quit buying it.
Yep.
And same. Paul's like, you need to get this one. So I picked it up, and it was my favorite book of the week. It just... such a feel-good book, because it's all about bats.
Yeah, it's how bats takes down the...
Victor Strange.
Victor Strange, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Aaron would have loved this book if he'd been in the series. If he'd been reading Blood Hunt, I feel like Aaron would have loved this one.
I feel like he could love it without even being in it. Just
you really could.
Bats calls the dog god.
Yeah, the god of all dogs. And I like how they even, you know, kind of lay out the logical structure about why there would be a god of dogs, right? Bats becomes the avatar of the dog god and just goes to town on Victor Strange, which was fantastic.
Yeah, who is Victor Strange?
He's Steven's half brother, I want to say.
Yeah, something like that. You know, it's a story that I didn't read. But yeah, clearly he's his bad half brother who was trapped within the sanitarium somewhere, or no, sanctorum, sanctum sanctorum. I don't know. You know what
sanctum,
I'm talking about.
Sanctum sanctorum.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was a great tie-in, honestly.
It was during the series when bats like first started being part. They had the whole Victor. I feel like that's when they had the Victor Strange storyline. But I wasn't reading it at that point either.
I continue to enjoy. Now, I have dropped out of the crappy ones that I didn't care for, like Blood Hunters and all that.
Oh,
but yeah. I enjoyed all the tie-ins, like the Midnight Suns, the Union Jack, and, you know, obviously the core title of Blood Hunt just continues to be so good. The only thing that was disappointing for me is that, Andrew, I don't know if you're still reading Moon Knight, but I've been out of Moon Knight for a little while, so his return didn't have quite the impact I think they wanted it to.
Yeah, like, so I dropped out because, you know, Moon Knight is also written by Jed McKay, you know, who's also writing Avengers, also the main writer for Blood Hunt. And so I started picking it up kind of like you had with Doctor Strange. I got behind on Vengeance of the Moon Knight and stopped buying it for a while. I didn't realize Moon Knight had died until I started got into this crossover with Moon Knight. And, you know, but I've enjoyed reading about Soldier and 8-Ball and the Shroud. I love the whole storyline about the Shroud back in like Moon Knight number 5, I think it was, because you know Shroud's a Dark Force user, mm-hmm. so you get to see what the Shroud's doing right up before he pop, you know, his head pops off and he starts gushing Dark Force everywhere. He's and apparently he's just undead, right? Because he brought back all of the dead. Fists have returned to help fight off the vampiric invasion. So will Mark Spector end up at the end of this alive again? You know, maybe. Maybe he'll be an undead Moon Knight. I don't know. But explains why he hasn't been showing up, because I was wondering where is
why they're focusing on Fist of Khonshu instead of Mark Spector.
Yeah. Right, the Hunter's Moon, because
you know, Hunter's Moon, that's who it was.
Even in Blood Hunt number 1, they had that little, you know, graphic on the first page about the main players. And under the Midnight Mission, it just listed, you know, Tigra and Hunter's Moon. You're like, huh, I feel like Moon Knight should be on that list too, but now I know why, because he's dead.
Yeah. Now, the best part of Blood Hunt number 4 is when they're like, hey, you know, we've got an idea, you know, requires spells, blah, blah, blah. And Stephen Strange is like, I'll gather up some magicians. And yeah. Dr. Doom is like, don't bother. I recruited the Strange Academy. And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
But I have not been reading that tie-in, so I probably have to check out that Strange Academy tie-in to see how that played out.
So yes. My highlight of the book, as much as I love the Doom stuff, was surprisingly the Black Panther stuff.
Well, and I'll tell you what, Black Panther number 1, total throwaway issue. Black Panther number 2 and number 3 for the Blood Hunt series, highly recommend. It's all about the past history of Varney and you know, how the first temple was created and how the gods stopped him. But go on.
Yeah, no, I love that we finally see a vampire fighting back against the, you know, basically the influence. But that moment of you know, you can't kill me with the stake,
right?
And the reveal that was the stake that was pulled out of Thor's head.
Yeah,
and Thor returns.
I had to go back and look at that graphic after you saw the reveal. I was like, is that to see exactly where he pulled that spike from? And I was like, I guess that little dark shadow is Thor's skull. Yeah, it was awesome. And then, of course, you know, the rest of the Avengers are dropping down. It is a great page to lead into the final issue of Blood Hunt.
It is one of those, you know, pages that actually makes you get excited for the fight that's about to happen. Like, they've Absolutely. Had their butt kicked and now it's on. And like, I am excited to see the fight.
I am too. And I'm sad. You know, it's weird because I feel like the event has been a perfect length. It didn't overstay its welcome, you know, with like 12 issues or 10 issues. It's nice at 5, but I'm almost sad that it's over already next month, because it's been so good, so cinematic. It's basically been like Tom Taylor. You know, it has felt very Tom Taylor-ish to me in that way, you know, with what they've done in this book. But I'm psyched. I'm psyched for what's remaining. I'm glad we still have a few more books to go before Blood Hunt number 5.
It feels very genre aware as well. I particularly loved in the Midnight Suns, they have a comment there about you know, oh, we're getting ready to go on this big mission, but now we all had visions that led us to Chicago. That's totally going to have something to do with the main mission we need to deal with.
You are so right, because Wayne, I was reading Midnight Suns number 2, and I'm like, oh, this is so dumb. They're going to get, you know, it's a side book, so they're going to get distracted from the main purpose they're getting together to do this stupid side thing, tangential to the main plot, and then they address that in the book. I was like, well, okay. I mean, At least you acknowledge the logic of a tie-in outside of the main storyline. And then, you know, Midnight Suns 2 was a little over the place. You know, Blade shows up, then he disappears. You're like, is that even the real Blade? And you're like, yeah. They're like, we don't know.
Yeah, it felt very random.
But it did feel random. But, you know, it's just so nice to see Blaze and Ketch and Montesi and everyone back together. I'm enjoying Midnight Sun still, but I will say Black Panther number 2, number 3, ignore number 1, but 2 and 3 really give you kind of how Khonshu and Varney and Bast and Anuket and a lot of these other African gods had interacted way back before the time of Atlantis, before the temple sank to underwater. So again, issue number one of Black Panther, skip it, but two and three actually really, I think it's worth your time.
All right. We'll have to check it out.
Oh, I have one more Blood Hunt related question.
Yes, sir.
So when I was making my pull box, I was like, oh, well, I want Blood Hunt. And the very nice lady was like, would you want the red band or the regular? I'm like, what's the red band Blood Hunt? Are you guys familiar about this?
No. What is that?
So there are two versions of each Blood Hunt book. There's the regular book, which is probably what we've been buying and reading. It's what I've been buying and reading. And they also have a red band version, which if you see it on the shelf in a physical store is polybag. So you can't just pick it up and flip through it. And it's apparently a much bloodier, gorier version of the artwork. So I think it's the same story. Yeah, I think it's the same story. I think it's the same underlying artwork, but they add a lot more gore. So it's, you know, when they say red band, it's the R-rated red band version of Blood Hunt.
I have not even that's not even available digitally.
It may not be. So if you look at the checklist though, you'll see under each Blood Hunt book.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought it was just a tie-in.
Yeah, so that's apparently what it is. So I may pick up. I have not picked up any of the red band stuff so far. I may pick up red band for issue 5 along with the regular issue 5 just to compare the two side by side.
Yeah, have they ever done anything like that before? I don't remember anything like that.
Yeah, not that I know of. Yeah.
But I might have to hit a comic because now I'm deadly curious. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, definitely at least to get the first issue and see what that one was like. I do see now that I know about it. Reddit has a couple of cases where people bought both issues and then compare the two. So you see the difference, and the difference does seem to be more blood and
more body parts, more blood in the background. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not going to I don't think it changes anything in the core storyline, but I'm curious to kind of, especially with the issue 5 being this big fight. I'm curious to maybe buy both versions and compare them.
I was going to say it doesn't seem to change anything on the art other than the blood. However, then I flipped the picture to compare the Doctor Strange. And in the one that we got, Doctor Strange gets run through with a sword by Blade.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In the red band, he gets sliced in two by the sword with blood and gore going everywhere.
Whew. Oh.
And this doesn't really fit the story, but...
Well, you get healed when he gets turned, right? He'll heal up. But and this is not available on Comixology, right?
No.
Interesting. I assumed it was available on Comixology. Wow.
No, I wish it was. All right, now I'm deadly curious. Look at Andrew introducing something that that might draw me into a comic shop. Well, I'm going to call first.
Well, and apparently the digital codes in the physical Blood Hunt Red Band editions give the regular version.
There's no digital red band version right now.
Correct.
I'll be curious in about 3 months. I will be curious to see what if the red band version comes to Marvel Unlimited or if it's just going to be the regular versions.
Yeah, or if they'll release a collected edition of the red band or like, look at all that. Super.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome. I provided added value today. I feel content.
Well, before we wrap up, we would not have a comic book podcast if we didn't at least touch on the Energon Universe update, especially because since the last time we've spoken, we now have the second issues. The second issue of Scarlet and the first issue of Destro.
So what do you think about him, Paul?
The first issue of Destro was okay.
I was not crazy about the Andre Brisson art. It's fine. I just have not been digging as much as I have some of the other artists on the Energon books.
Yeah, I would agree. The art was not as strong on that one. The story was fine. It's honestly, it's a lot of setup in this first issue of, you know, Destro and his organization, Mars, and his partnership with Cobra Commander. So it was, we know because it was announced this week since the last time we recorded that G.I. Joe number one is coming from the creative team behind the Duke book. So it's Joshua Williamson and the same art team as well from the Duke book. So that's obviously great because we love the art and the artist Tom Riley and Jordi Belair on that book. So this one, different artist, different story, but I, you know, Destro's fine. It is very much, again, like setting up the organization that is Cobra and its partnership with Mars, which is a weapons manufacturer, as well as establishing Tomax and Zanat.
However you pronounce it.
Yeah. You know, the twins and how they play into everything as well. So
I did appreciate in Destro that it really kind of helped flesh out that Cobra is not a monolithic organization united under Cobra Commander, that it has these different factions that are often competing with each other, and there's infighting and power struggles. Yeah. I did really enjoy that part of it.
I did too. I like that that's how they started, you know, that's what they're setting up from the get-go, instead of starting it with like, hey, they're all, you know, everyone's under Cobra Commander, and then you have dissenting later on. You kind of start with the tensions to begin with.
What do you think, Wayne?
I don't think Wayne's read Destro number one.
Yeah, no, I haven't read copy yet.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But you know what?
My fault.
I enjoyed Destro. Not as much, I would say, of the four series, Scarlet, Duke, Cobra Commander, and Destro. Destro's probably the weakest one so far, but we're only one issue in. So we'll
Strength of their first issues, it is certainly the weakest of the four. But again, it's based on the first issue. We'll see see how it evolves. But Scarlet number two continues to thrill and amaze.
So good. God. This may be my favorite after two.
Books. It's really in there with Duke for me. I don't know. Duke and Scarlet are tough. They're both really, really good.
Scarlet wins for me just because it brings in the ninjas, right? Because obviously I love Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. And so, you know, the fact that it's so rooted in that, and it has Hard Master in it and all that, like, it is so good. And I love the art on it. I love the art action.
So good. The art is, I think this is my favorite art out of all of the, definitely my favorite. The Marco Ferrari art is my favorite so far out of the four books, the G.I. Joe books. And you know, the test they have set up for her, to prove her loyalty is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right outside like Mission Impossible, type of mission. And I'm, you know, Storm Shadow, correct me if I'm wrong, we have not seen Snake Eyes in any of the four books yet, right?
No, not yet.
Okay.
And he's not on the cover of G.I. Joe number one, so I feel like they're going to build that up.
Okay. Was there a release date for G.I. Joe number one?
After these – no, I didn't. It's after these two series, so I'm not entirely – I think it
so a few was months off.
October maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. September or October, something like that.
And then
November 13th. So
okay,
so we're still a ways. I think they announced it pretty early, but I mean, we see some of the characters we've already been introduced to. We see the twins, we see Destro, we see Cobra Commander, we see Duke, we see the Baroness, but on the side of G.I. Joe.
Right, I saw that cover shot. Yeah. With the Baroness, I can only expect that at some point she's going to betray the Joes.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen, right?
Destro. Yeah, you know that's setting it up, but
right.
I'm looking forward to seeing it happen.
And then once G.I. Joe number one comes out, are all the side issues going to disappear for a while? All the named kind of miniseries?
They haven't announced yet. Okay. Just because, you know, we still have three issues left on Scarlet, four issues left on Destro. So
right.
Maybe we'll get a Snake Eyes series of what he's doing concurrent with G.I. Joe.
I feel like if they don't have a regular series that's the Cobra's perspective, that they're going to keep doing the mini series for them.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah.
Give me a Snake Eyes. Give me a Storm Shadow series. You know, give
Baroness.
Me one of them.
Give Baroness. Me a Baroness. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again,
I'm all in on this G.I. Joe. And I know, Wayne, you didn't grow up with G.I. Joe. You know, you were more Transformers. And, you know, Andrew and I were a little bit more G.I. Joe. But
yeah, it's like, I don't have
it. What they're setting up.
I don't have any of the nostalgia for it like you guys do, but I'm loving what they've done so far. And I think Scarlet may be my favorite series as well. As much as I love Duke, I am really loving Scarlet.
I think you'll love Scarlet number two, Wayne. It was phenomenal. And I picked up this variant cover featuring Scarlet and Storm Shadow that I'm just in love with as well. Like it's in my running for favorite cover, best cover of the year.
And one of the nice things about the digital copies is that they include the variant covers. So yeah, that the variant covers on this are pretty slick.
Yeah,
yeah. If it wasn't for the fact that we all need our Blood Hunt to be our favorite covers,
just to more Needle Aaron. We need to have at least one Blood Hunt book in every category.
I'm down for this.
It is definitely a contender for crossover of the year, unless something wildly amazing happens in the second half of the year, because we're halfway through.
Yeah,
Blood Hunt takes the cake easily.
I mean, it's certainly, because I don't read a lot of ongoing series, so our special events, so it's gonna feature in mine, I think, pretty well. And you know what, Aaron's not gonna go back and listen to the end of this, so he will not know what we're planning until
he might. Aaron has left us, so there's no one to ask me what comes out next week. But
hey, Paul,
Andrew,
what comes out next week?
Well. Well, Andrew, from DC Comics, we get the second issue of Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age, that Elseworld story. We get the newest issue of Batman and Robin. And the only reason I'm mentioning that is because it's set on Dinosaur Island. Mm. So it's Batman, Damian Wayne, and dinosaurs. We also get the newest issue of Action Comics, which is not related to Absolute Power, but is they've advertised it in the DC books this week. It's a Gail Simone arc on Action Comics. And we also get from the DC Vault, Death in the Family, Robin Lives number one, which is the start of a miniseries that goes back in time and says in 1988, if Jason Todd had lived, what would have happened next? And so it's written by J.M. DeMatteis, art by Rick Leonardi, and takes off of, an alternate ending of the Death in the Family storyline.
I'm going to get first issue of that at very
least. I've not read DC in a while, but that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'm very interested. From Marvel Comics, we get some Blood Hunt tie-ins. We get the latest issue of Avengers and the final issue of Union Jack the Ripper Blood Hunt. We also get the second issue of The Ultimates and the third issue of Get Fury that we've been talking about on the podcast.
Yes.
And we get the first issue of From the Ashes, X-Men number one. From Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman. Definitely will be picking that one up.
I need clarification. So we know there's three X-Men books. Is this a transition series from the old X-Men to these new three books?
This is the start of the new X-Men stuff.
So which of the three teams is this?
This is Cyclops, Juggernaut, Beast, looks like Psylocke.
Okay.
Magic, and Quentin Quire,
This week, one of the things that came out, I don't know if you saw it in the stores, there was a X-Men From the Ashes sampler.
It came out that was
free, that gives you the first couple pages of quite a few of the titles coming out for X-Men.
Oh, really? Okay. It
gives you a little previews of what's coming. So
yeah, I missed it.
Yeah, definitely free book.
Yeah, previews. Was that only it is available digitally. Thank you, Wayne. I'm learning so much new stuff on this podcast. I picked it up.
I enjoyed it for that sneak preview. I plan on getting the first issue of the three main titles, but I wasn't sure about some of the other titles, whether I was going to give them a try or not. And now with this, I know which ones I'm going to do and which ones I'm not.
Well, for my knowledge, as I'm going to the stands each week, which ones are you going to do, do you think?
I'm interested in the X-Force one after seeing the preview. Or not X-Force, X-Factor.
X-Factor, okay.
Yeah. I don't, normally I wouldn't do NYX, but I am interested in it after the preview page.
What's the concept between NYX?
All the young characters in New York. So okay. Ms. Marvel, Wolverine, Prodigy, Sophie Cuckoo.
Would you say Wolverine was one of the young characters?
Yeah, the X-23 version.
Oh, Laura Kinney Wolverine. Yeah. Got it. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I'm definitely picking up the first issue of the main three. And then I've always had a soft spot for X-Factor, so that may be on my list too. I'll flip through it at the week on the stand.
Yeah, same here. All right. And finally, the last book that I didn't mention yet is from IDW, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 40th Anniversary Comic Celebration. Featuring kind of a murderer's row of artists and writers who have written Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles over the last 40 years, and setting up the new Jason Aaron story of what's coming next. Well,
all right,
gentlemen. Well, I think that does it for us. Like I said, Aaron had to drop, but he can't tell you that what are your thoughts on this week's episode? What are you most looking forward to in Blood Hunt specifically?
Yes.
Send us an email at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com or hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X. Let us know your thoughts on all the major events that are happening right now between Blood Hunt, Absolute Power, and Annihilation 2099.
Please reach out to us with your personal stories about how Aaron's preview of Blood Hunt led you to buy and appreciate the series. And if you could address those to Aaron specifically, yeah. I would consider a personal favor.
Yes, I think we would like that. All right, gentlemen. Well, we will do it all again next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.